So do you have anything you would like to say to the recipient of your sperm or a child born from your sperm?
Look both ways before you cross the street, and have fun. Have fun with these genes.
Hi, I'm Kaylee, a college student and pretend journalist who was conceived with donor sperm in 1999. This is Message in a Bottle. Welcome to episode 3. I hope everyone has had a nice holiday break and is staying safe. I've been at my parents' house in Connecticut before I go back to Vermont to start my last semester of college. Oh, I definitely needed some time off from school and thinking, but this whole podcast thing has just overwhelmed my brain in a good way. Like I've mentioned, I've always known I was conceived with donor sperm because I have two moms, but I'd never been a part of the online DCP community until now. By the way, for the newbies, DCP stands for Donor Conceived Person or People. It's hard because the people involved in the whole world are sick of hearing acronyms explained, and the people who are unfamiliar with donor conception in the first place probably feel like I'm speaking a foreign language. Anyway, as of now, I've met and spoken with several DCP to hear their stories, some of which sounded familiar and similar to my own, and others that are drastically different. This new information, well, new to me, has made me realize that the goal of the show is really to give a platform to all kinds of people involved in the world of donor conception, instead of just talking about my own experience. Going forward, each episode will feature a different guest, and they'll be released on Thursday mornings. So be sure to follow the podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, or subscribe on YouTube, or do all three. You can and should also follow the show's Instagram page, which is at Message in a Bottle Podcast. And if you are an egg or sperm or embryo donor conceived person, or you're a donor yourself, or you're a parent who has donor conceived children or anything related, email me. I would love to have you on the show to share your story. My email address and links to everything else is in the episode description. Okay, so you might be wondering, well, what is this episode about? I know I just said that I don't want to talk about myself the whole time, but I feel like we're missing an important part of my story. Or I guess the story of donor 5182. Let me explain. If you've taken careful notes thus far, you'll know that my sperm donor donated to California Cryobank in 1998 and 99. In 2001, my parents, Donna and Deborah, went back to buy more of his vials to give me a full sibling, but his ID number was gone from the system. So they contacted the bank, paid a reactivation fee, and he made some more contributions, which they used to have my little brother Aiden. To their understanding, this second batch of vials belonged only to them, because they were the ones who paid for them and paid to have him reactivated.
I don't remember the details, but what I said was, I think we were both under the assumption it was only doing this for us.
Right.
Not for public distribution.
Right. So apparently that's just not a thing.
Of course, we now know that they were wrong because someone else did purchase some of the second batch vials in 2007 and had a child who was years younger than the original group of 10 half-siblings. For the sake of clarity, we'll call this half-sister by a fake name, Molly. Now, I don't know if that was just a misunderstanding or an assumption, or if California Cryobank intentionally misled them to believe that the 5182 vials were off the market. In episode 2, I learned that my biological father was also under the assumption that the vials produced after the reactivation were only going to be sold to one family who had already had a kid, me, with his sperm. The mother of this half-sister, Molly, reached out to my parents in 2011. We met up a couple of times, but Molly was very young, and we eventually fell out of touch. I hadn't really thought about the whole thing in a while, but doing this project and reading about how sketchy and unregulated sperm banks are made me wonder if I could get some answers through a bit of internet sleuthing. I don't know if you've heard of this website, and I don't remember how I found out about it, but there's an internet archive called the Wayback Machine. You enter in any web address, and the Wayback Machine can show you what the website looked like at earlier points in time, meaning you can use it to see what Google looked like to users in 2005 or what Amazon looked like in 2013, for example. So last week, I used this site to see what California Cryobank's website looked like in 1997, 98, 99, and so on. When I did this, I realized that I could access donor profile catalogs from each year. Now, in the early 90s and before that, a lot of these clinics selected the donor for the parents, which is a whole other issue. But I'm what is known as a catalog baby because my parents were given an Excel spreadsheet of profiles to choose from. These spreadsheets included the donor ID number, their hair color, eye color, ethnicity, height, weight, college major. They ended up picking donor 5182, a tall Jewish white guy who studied philosophy. He first appears in the catalog in 1998 and is again listed in 1999, which makes sense because he still had available vials. Then he is not in the 2000 catalog, which also checks out. This must have been when my parents realized that he was gone from the system and then they went through the whole reactivation process. Donna, Deborah, and the donor all believe that these new vials were only going to my parents to make a full sibling. I continue to comb through these yearly catalogs. What was so interesting and confusing is that his ID number is not listed in the catalogs from 2001, 2002, 3, 4, or 2005, but randomly appears again in 2006, and then it's missing again in 2007 and the years following. It was so concrete, such an obvious error. Did the bank intend on selling his sperm right after he was reactivated and then forgot for a few years? That didn't seem right. Or did someone realize this donor still had vials in 2006, decide to list him in that catalog, and then the remainder got purchased by Molly's mom? It just didn't add up. So I decided to call up California Cryobank. I was on hold for a while, but eventually this guy Brian picks up.
Thank you for calling California Cryobank. This is Brian. How can I help you?
I explained a little bit about the podcast to him, and I asked if it was okay that I recorded our conversation, and he said that he was happy to help and answer any questions.
Okay, so should I give you the number?
That would be my next question. Yeah, what's the donor number?
It's 05182.
Excellent. Thank you. 05182. Let me pull this up real quick. Just out of habit, I always read a description. Brown hair, blue eyes, 6'2", A negative blood type.
After explaining the whole Molly situation and the confusing catalogs, he started telling me about the reactivation process.
So what that donor was under a reactivation program. So if a donor is completely sold out of vials, we can, in the past, because it's been suspended just since COVID, so we're not doing it at the moment, but it's still on our site. So I can't speak to 2000. I wasn't working here back then.
Right.
I've been here for about 8 years. Mm-hmm. Reactivation's always been the same for the past 8 years. So if a donor sells out of vials, a client can request that a donor be reactivated.
Right.
Now, it's never been a company policy in the 8 years I've been here that those vials only belong to the person paying for the reactivation. It might have been different back in 2000. I can't say. But what I can say, the only people that can typically purchase reactivated vials would be folks with a reported live birth or pregnant or, yeah, reported live birth from that donor. Now, looking at this donor's profile, this donor never hit a pregnancy maximum limit to restrict them for sibling use only. Meaning, if vials were to become available today, technically they could be sold because he hasn't hit that pregnancy maximum. So typically when a donor hits around, usually it's in like the 25 reported pregnancy range, a donor is restricted for sibling use. So there is a possibility that he was brought back on a reactivation, your family, you know, was able to purchase those vials to be used to, you know, for your brother. And then, you know, in the future, I would have to do some digging or ask some questions to people that were here then or might have more knowledge. But I guess maybe it's possible that those vials were made available to the general public because he hadn't hit a pregnancy max. But that's just me trying to use logic and reason as to what might have happened or as why he appeared on a catalog. But and I'm not 100% positive of that. I'm not sure. There's no notes or there for me. There's no indication that a reactivation ever occurred. And that's just based on what I'm seeing within this new system.
Right.
And technically, there are vials available right now. It's telling me that there's 6 IUI vials available right now.
Of his sperm.
I'm not sure if you can tell, but I was very surprised to hear that because none of us were aware that he still had vials in the system and could, in theory, be purchased tomorrow. And I have a baby sibling and I'm in college. Like, I just had no idea that that was even possible, that that was the case. So, yeah, I was just very surprised by that.
Of his sperm. And there's also vials in storage, meaning there are other clients out there with vials in storage that technically could be shipped and used, you know, here in 2021.
That's crazy. So wait, so it can, it still, like, works? Like?
100%. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. So frozen donor sperm, doesn't matter if it's frozen for one day or 10 years, I guess in theory for 100 years. So the element of liquid nitrogen and that spontaneous flash freeze that occurs when the, you know, human tissue meets with liquid nitrogen, it's instantaneously frozen. And the element of liquid nitrogen operates differently than just, you know, cold temperatures that we think of in, like, a freezer, for example, like our freezer in the kitchen, right? So.
Yeah.
Yes, you know, we've done, so basically there's a part of our company called fertility preservation, and basically what it is, I'll use myself as an example, as a male, you know, for example, say I were 15 years old and was diagnosed, and these are like a real life case studies of, like, 15 year olds are diagnosed with, like, testicular cancer, and before they begin their treatment, treatment like chemo kills human reproductive tissue.
Right.
So what will happen is, you know, a 15-year-old will come in, we will bank their sperm at 15. This is an actual case study that I'm familiar with. And 20 years later, he's 35, his wife uses the sperm, she gets pregnant, and they have a child. And that's just a case of sperm that's frozen for 20 years.
Right.
That led to a positive outcome. So frozen donor sperm, in theory, can, you know, remain frozen for one day or 100 years and still be viable when it's thawed.
That's wild.
It's truly, truly, truly wild. It is so wild. I mean, the fact that you and I are having a conversation, it's, like, awesome, right? I mean, to me, it's awesome. I think it's pretty wild in and of itself.
Yeah, that's... So, are the vials... I mean, I don't know why I would do this, but, like, could I buy them?
Okay, just by the way, I did not mean could I buy them to use for myself, because obviously I would not do that, and why would I do that? I meant could I buy them to take them off the market so that I don't end up with a sibling that is a year old when I'm in my 40s. I mean, I guess there would be nothing wrong with it. It's just kind of, I was just curious.
They're, like,
technically, yeah.
Where I'm not going to use, you know, them. That's super messed up.
You could create. I wouldn't recommend it.
But
that is. I wouldn't recommend, but that is kind of crazy. That's kind. I mean, you could add that to your story. I mean, that's like. I mean, that could be a full. That could be a full chapter and book of, like, oh my gosh, I'm donor conceived and my donor still has vials available, and, like, I mean, that's wild in and of itself. But technically, like, without you and I ever speaking of this, technically anyone can create an account online, sign the terms and conditions, you know, purchase vials and ship vials.
That's great. So how much are they sold for, like, one of them? I'm not actually going to do this. This is just out of curiosity.
I'm very glad you're not going to do this, Kaylee. so he is an anonymous donor. His vials would be $9.45 for the vial.
I see. That's crazy.
When your parents purchased it, it was probably like $200.
Right. So, okay, so you're talking about the limit of pregnancies. Do they have, like, is it different between, they limit the number of families that one donor can give to, and or the number of children, like.
Yeah, exactly. So not every pregnancy results in a live birth.
Right.
There's unfortunately about a 20%, you know, miscarriage rate. And that's just, you know, you can look that up online. That's just across the board, whether it's donor conceived sperm, whether it's donor sperm or,
like,
you
one
know,
in four pregnancies or something like
conceiving.
That.
So we err on the side of like a very conservative number, is to say the number of family units per donor is typically in like the 15 to 20 family units. And keep in mind that's worldwide. So we ship to not only the US, but there's roughly about 80 countries around the world that we ship vials to.
I didn't even know that.
80 is high. I think 80 is about how many we have over the years, but there's a consistent about 20 countries that we ship around the world today that I know of.
Huh. Are, when you look at this profile, can you see?
Say again?
If you look at whatever you're looking at on the computer, I'm assuming, like, can you see if there are, like, international people that bought it, or can you see, do you keep like a record of the different people?
Yeah, this system doesn't give me a record of like where it was shipped and things like that. This system right now just tells me like what's actively available, gives me just, you know, the basic information that I shared with you, the donor information, and then any like notes or restrictions.
So you can access, what you're looking at is sort of like the current status of his like profile in the system.
I can tell you he has over, you know, there's over 5 reported pregnancies. They only let us say yes or no to live births, but you already know a lot of this information. It sounds like, you know, maybe based on 23andMe and, you know, sibling registry, but it sounds like maybe you've had contact, you said, with the donor himself and maybe the potential half siblings out there.
Yeah.
You might even have more information than I do, to be honest.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, right. So I'm aware of, let me think, besides, I'm aware of 10 other children besides myself and then his son, his like normal son. So it's 10 other people. And it's, so basically in total, it's 11 kids born amongst 8 separate families. So
8 family units. He's even under like what our family unit criteria. And honestly, it's pretty remarkable because 20 years ago, they didn't really have strict vial limits like we do today. So we collect far less samples today as a company per donor than we did 20 years ago.
Right. Could I assume that?
Could you assume there could be potential other babies born in the future? There definitely is that potential because there's a few vials available and there's also some people that have vials in storage.
Then we started talking about the more technical aspect of the vials to pregnancy ratio, like how many vials could be produced by one visit to the center. If you know what I mean, I just feel like no one has ever given me a straight answer and it's like pretty hard to understand. So I thought I would ask Brian.
One vial, do you know is it like milliliters or something?
One vial, you know, typically it's one vial per insemination. Vials are going to have a sperm range, typically anywhere from like 7 to 13 million sperm per vial. You know, 20 years ago, science would say the average healthy woman needs probably 10 to 20 million sperm. You know, in 2021, you know, advanced medicine say a healthy woman needs about 5 million modal sperm to get pregnant.
And
that's via IUI.
So that can come from one vial. And then is the one vial equivalent to like one time that the person visited the center and did what they had to do? Like, is that the...
Nope. I'll use myself as an example. Okay, so I have 3 kids and I'm married. So my wife and I, so for example, if I were to have a release, I could have anywhere from like 50 to 100 million sperm in that release. So the vials are kind of a fraction of a donation. So if a donor came in and donated one time, the average is typically like 3 to 5 vials are created.
Oh, I see.
Because not, not all of the specimen makes it into vials. So, like, little different test vials are created. Different, like, vials are created for archive statuses. You know, it's a very scientific process. So the cryobank, at the end of the day, is a cryogenic laboratory, right?
Right,
so
like freezing.
The California Cryobank is not a medical provider. So we're just like the middle person between the patient, in this case your mom, and the physician or the doctor going to do the insemination. So our designation from a medical perspective is that we procure human tissue to be used in insemination to create life.
Right. Yeah, I see. That's interesting. Right.
So yeah, donor comes in and donates, and then from there it's a scientific process of procuring the specimen, meaning you're going to take a collection of specimen, a collection from the donor, and then from there they procure to create vials. And on average it's like, we'll just say three to five vials on average from a donation.
From the like one donation, I see. So do you put limits on, like, I remember my donor told me that before, like, the reason that he ended up leaving the first time was, you know, he wasn't all that, like, you know, he didn't have like a super specific reason to continue, but also he had turned 40. So at the time they were like, okay, we're retiring you. But do you have like a limit of how many years or how much sperm one person can donate?
Yeah. There's basically like a mathematical equation where the average healthy woman, you know, it takes about four tries to get pregnant,
mm-hmm.
and that's via IUI. So the company procures, or should say, you know, creates enough vials to attempt to hit that pregnancy, you know, or the family unit outcome. So
to make
here's
money.
What I can share. Yeah, so here's what I can share. Like 20 years ago, like I was kind of sharing, like 20 years ago, like they would collect way more vials than today. Like one thing I could share is that the overwhelming majority of donors today will never hit that pregnancy max because the company limits the overall number of vials we collect.
I see. But okay, thank you. I think I've exhausted my questions.
All right, good luck. Good luck with your paper.
Thank you.
Good to okay, you. I'm glad
All
to
right.
hear that you're in good spirits. If
yeah,
I can ever be of help, my name is Brian.
Okay.
I'm happy to assist, okay?
Thank you. All right.
You're welcome. Take care now. Okay.
Bye. King.
I liked him.
What a king.
So yeah, that was my phone call with Brian from California Cryobank, and obviously he was pretty funny and engaging, and he answered a few of my questions and obviously filled me in on this very interesting information that I had no idea about before. But I don't know how well he really answered my main question, which was if the reactivation process and the policy was that if the person didn't reach their family or pregnancy limit, they would just be recirculated into the general population. Why did his ID number disappear for so many years and then randomly reappear and disappear again? And also, I don't know how clear the distinction between the family limit and the pregnancy limit really is, because they know and they have a log of who, how many family units has purchased sperm or vials from one donor, and they could cap that. But they don't really know how many pregnancies and live births result in each family unit. And it's just a whole unregulated situation. But there's still a long way to go before the process is entirely ethical and perfect. And I don't know if we'll ever get there. There are different ideas that people have and policies that different banks have implemented, like the open ID situation, which is when the kids produced by a donor are guaranteed to know the identity of their donor when they turn 18. But that's a whole other separate issue and has its own problems. Next week's episode is a conversation with a donor-conceived person named Morgan, and her story is very interesting and has a lot to do with the lack of regulation and
what can happen when the sperm banks don't ask the right questions or the donors aren't honest in their answers. But we will get into that next episode. So I hope you enjoyed this little mini episode finishing my whole saga about being donor conceived. And now we can kind of proceed and, you know, ask the audience and hear from other donor conceived people, other donors, egg donors, different stuff, people that are receiving parents, meaning that they have kids who are donor conceived. So like I said before, if any of that applies to you and you would like to be on an episode, just shoot me an email. All right. Hi, it's me again. Days later, I actually have an update that's very interesting. So because all of this has been on everyone's mind more because of the podcast, my mom, Donna, who you heard from briefly, decided to reach out to Molly's mom just to update her because we haven't spoken in so long, and she wasn't aware of the current count of all the siblings and the fact that we've all been getting together more. So she wanted to fill her in, and my sister Molly is now 13 and she's getting more comfortable and familiar with the whole idea of potentially meeting us. And Molly's mom was able to listen to some of the podcasts, which I think is really cool. So hi, if you're listening, we would love to see you guys again and hang out and include everybody in the group. And I'm just really glad that you were born, even though we don't exactly know how it happened. But regardless, we're all very happy that you're here. And I'm happy that you all listening are here and have stuck around. So look out for next week's episode. It'll come out on Thursday and every Thursday after that until the end of time. No, I'm kidding. But thank you for listening and I hope you have a happy new year. Alrighty, bye.